Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, alone words from home, alone words from.
Of course I had heard of Goree. Goree piazzas are to be found on the Dock Road, close to Liverpool's pierhead. I just didn't know that the original Goree is a small island just off the coast of Senegal, southeast of Dakar. I'd always known that Liverpool had connections with the transatlantic slave trade because, when I was a small child, my father showed me a large metal ring fixed into a wall. That, he said, was where the slaves were tied up when they were disembarked from the ships. It was only recently that I learned that the link between the rings and the slave trade is only local folklore. My father didn't know, and neither did anybody else to whom I spoke, that slaves were rarely offloaded in Liverpool. They didn't know that Goree piazzas were only built after Britain's abolition of slavery in 1807, 11 years after a High Court ruling that any slave who set his foot on English soil was automatically a free person. My generation grew up knowing of the connection between Liverpool and transatlantic slavery. It was a dark part of Liverpool's history. We were told about it. We saw pictures of the inhuman treatment of human beings who, against their will, had been dragged from their homes, families and countries, loaded into ships, who suffered appalling conditions and were forced into dreadful servitude. Transatlantic slavery is part of the sad side of the city's history, but it has also been an incentive to remember all that happened, so that, in remembering, it can never happen again. Tony Tibbles, keeper of the Merseyside Maritime Museum, comments.
It's a bit like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. You need to lay everything on the table and then you're able to move forward. If you don't do that and people are harbouring resentment about the past, then it prevents people talking and working together.
Yet, just as Liverpool children could be horrified to hear the details of a part of their past, so was a Pope deeply moved by the conditions he found when he visited Goree in February 1992.
Laissez-moi vous dire ma joie, mon émotion de vous rendre visite dans cette île célèbre, Goree.
Allow me to express my Goree. Conflicting emotions at visiting Saint this Paul. African shrine of black
La
sorrow. It is the emotion that one naturally experiences in a place like this, so profoundly marked by the inconsistencies of the human heart, the scene of an eternal struggle between light and darkness, between good and evil, between grace and sin. Goree, the symbol of the coming of the gospel of freedom, is also, unfortunately, the symbol of the appalling madness of those who reduced into slavery the brothers and sisters to whom the gospel of freedom is destined.
Ne veux pas demeurer insensible à tout ce que représente Goree.
But who were these people who were taken from their homes in Africa to unforeseen hardships in America? Let them tell you for themselves.
My name is Okechukwu. I'm of the Igbo tribe. I don't know where I am. I don't know why I am here. This isn't right. My life was good before I was brought here. I miss it so much. The fields, the trees, the sunshine, my people, the Igbo. Most of all, I miss my mother and father. I dream about my mother. She is in a long blue dress she wove herself. She is cooking with the herbs and spices our neighbors have grown. Father is outside, chewing tobacco as he works at his fire. I even miss my metal work. I imagine my father showing me how to handle the brass, folding and heating it. The only metal I know now is around my wrists and ankles.
I am Oyeladun of the Yoruba people. My story is like everyone's here. I had a good life and was taken. Other people here want to die. I'm going to live. After several hard years, things were getting better for my people, the Yoruba. The cocoa and yams were flourishing, and there was plenty for us to do in the fields around our village. Shortly before I was taken, I was betrothed to a man from my village, Baba Tunde. He makes sculptures and masks and other beautiful things from wood. I was very happy to be his wife. We held a great celebration, a tambour. We rejoiced with drums and dancing, and I played my stikadao. It was wonderful, hopeful day, and I look back to that time and those people with great joy and longing.
I am Kwame. I was of the Ashanti people. I hope I will be Ashanti again, but I'm not sure that is possible. My people, the Ashanti, traded with the whites for longer than I can remember. We swapped our slaves for wood and metal weapons called muskets. Now I am one of those slaves. Like many others, I was a goldsmith in our town, Kumasi, making jewelry and statues and other decorations. I learned the skill from my father and he from his. We made many beautiful pieces. They made us wealthy. Our best customer was the Asantehe, although I did not agree with his taste.
When did the slave trade begin? And where did Liverpool figure in the story? Tony Tibbles responds.
It started in the late 15th, early 16th centuries in relatively small ways, but grew during the 17th and 18th centuries. And although it was abolished by Britain in 1807, it actually continued for about another 60 years after that, because there was a lot of trading going on by other countries, and there was also quite a lot of trading going on directly between places like Cuba and Brazil and Africa during the 19th century. And in fact, about a quarter of all Africans who were enslaved and transported across the Atlantic happened after 1807. By the end of the 18th century, Liverpool was the principal port in Europe that was involved.
The slave trade reached its height during the 18th century, a period which coincided with the Industrial Revolution in Britain. The invention of the spinning jenny and of huge looms that were eventually powered by steam rather than water created an insatiable demand for cotton goods. Their cost of manufacture plummeted, enabling people to buy these materials at an affordable price, further increasing the thirst for cotton. When, in America, the cotton gin was invented, it made possible the production of greatly increased quantities of yarn. However, cotton production itself was highly labour-intensive. The best way of ensuring a large labour force without too much expense was to utilise the work of slaves. So how were the slaves brought from Africa? Again, let them tell you their own stories.
Everything is so clear in my head, yet so confusing. There was shouting and firelight in the darkness, then the smell of burning and my people screaming. Outside our home I saw our enemies. They had flaming torches and were shouting. There were so many of them. The smoke, the fire and the noise. I was confused. I felt a blow to my head, then hands grabbing me. My mother screamed, then fell silent with the explosion that seemed to come from one of our enemies. Then I went to sleep. I wish I had stayed asleep. When I woke, I was far from my home. I was very scared. I thought that I was to be a slave of our enemies. There were other men from my village with me, but their looks told me that things were very bad for us. They were right. I don't know how far we walked, but it was a long way. My head hurt, and I felt so sick.
We had heard about the white people with their money and their guns from the people we traded with. I had even seen some of their strange pots and metal and beads from faraway places. We had heard that the white people bought our slaves and even took other people. Why would they want so many people, and where could they be taking them? We had feared the white people, but it was people we called neighbors that we should have feared. Two men came one day while I was looking after the village children. They seemed to want to trade. Too late, I realized that there were many more hiding outside, some holding what I later learned were guns. I kicked and punched and screamed for the others in the field, but my friends and family were too far away to help us. They expected me to just walk away from my village. Would they let a stranger take them away so easily? I refused, so instead they first carried, then dragged me until my feet and knees bled. A day's journey took us to the coast and the ocean.
I don't know why the Asante lied. He said I cheated him, that I sold him poor quality gold. Other young men, some I know well, were accused of crimes as well. I think he planned to sell us to the white slave traders. Some of our others tried to struggle against the guns and chains. There was no point. I saved my strength. I don't see my family. I fear for my wife, Kesi, and our son, Adisa. I hope my father is there to care for them. I hope they are safe. I think the Asantini will tell my father lies and try to cheat him again. I try to be angry, hoping it will stop me falling into misery like the others here, but it is difficult. The traders were calm when they took us. They have had practice, and I know what they are doing. We were chained, each to the other by hands and feet, and made to walk the long road. I knew where we were going, a 9-day walk to the coast, where we would be sold to the white men. This was the time to escape, but there was no chance. On the first day, my partner in chains fell to the floor, twisting and foaming at his mouth. The traders saw his weakness and kicked and whipped him all the way to the coast. Any chance for me to run disappeared then. If I had worked in the gold mine or even in the fields, I might have walked easier. The heat, weight of the metal, insects, and distance hurt so much. I was almost happy when we felt the sea breeze and saw the blue of the water. The white of the sails on the white man's ship was less comforting.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, alone, away from home.